Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Aquí estamos. Aquí nos quedamos y aquí ganamos. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome to Dogfight, your home fans of the University of Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm here with Law Dog and Mitch, full strength. So we've wrapped up spring football, heading into year two with Kalen DeBoer coming off an 11-2 season. So many unknowns in the conference. Let's talk about it. Let's get into it. Law Dog, the transfer portal has been active across the Pac-12 and even here in Montlake.
Yeah, well, I mean, since we last got together, right, all the incoming guys we had to talk about, now it's like more about let's talk about the outgoing guys, and it seems like there's more kind of every day. I mean, the huge names, right? Sam Heward, the lefty legacy, chose to get into the portal after the signing period in December and ended up going to Cal Poly. To reunite with his old coach from Auburn, where he played in high school, and then also Savelle Smalls, that's the other big name, just a few days ago now getting into the portal, and he's committed to Coach Prime in Colorado, and so he's going to be suiting up with the Buffs this fall. And then, I mean, there's a bunch of other names out there as well. I mean, the one that caught my attention was Miles Morrow. He was... You know, you try to build that depth on the offensive line. A guy like that who'd gone to what, Modern Day or big high school down in California, was a big get when we got him. He's been in the program for what, 3-4 years, and now he's moving on. So there's a lot of, and then I wouldn't say, you know, any like key players we're anticipating kind of taking the lead in 2023 in the portal. But I mean, as you look at the roster in 2023, there's a lot of guys who are not going to be returning in 2024. And a guy like Savelle Smalls would have been a big part of your defense. And, Miles Morrow might have been a big part of your offensive line. Who knows? And so, you know, I think that those outgoing transfers that kind of saw the writing on the wall with spring football, you know, they are kind of looking for places where they think there's going to be a little bit more playing time. And who can blame them? And that's just college football these days, but the Huskies, who were kind of coming in way heavy on the roster coming out of the winter with what, 90 or so scholarships, are now down to 81, and you know, maybe looking for some guys now to come into the portal or join in the fall. So definitely a lot of shakeup on the roster. And anyone else get your attention, guys?
Well, it was interesting how a couple months ago we were like, how are we going to get to 85? How are we going to get there? And now all of a sudden you're at 81. Look, we're not doing what Colorado did of 57 transfers out. I mean, unprecedented. I don't know what, like, Oregon's not too far behind how many they've transferred out, but you know, look at our total number, 18 transfers out, 7 transfers in. When I look at these, I think it's really interesting. I think it looks like from a recruiting perspective, when you remember back, there isn't anyone that's transferred out where I've thought, holy crap, that guy was going to start this year. Or, wow, he was one injury down from this guy being completely dependent on this year for being the man, or was last year. But I can think back of all their names from the recruiting perspective of how, I mean, Savelle Smalls was a legendary pickup. That was like, finally, we can build the fence around, you know, one of the biggest names in the state in that year. Same thing with Sam Heward, the legacy. And even Miles Morrow was a big pickup. You know, go down the road. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's a lot who I think that where they just haven't panned out. But you get a guy like Savelle, and a chance to sit with Savelle and Nate Coleppo at the dinner this year. And I'll say, like, Nate Coleppo, man of very few words, but Savelle, you know, talked a ton. It was good to get to know him. And it definitely at that time did not seem in his he didn't seem like someone who was on the way out the door, but did seem like someone who 100% my goal is to play in the NFL. And I got some fun business ideas down the road, but I'm playing in the NFL and I'm going to go. And so, you know, if at some point you got to wonder, are there conversations that we're not privy to in which, you know, the coach is stating like, look, this is where you are. And, you know, you take that with what you want. I bet he started last year on Colorado. I bet he starts it this year in Colorado. And so he may have done himself some favors getting some playing time. But a guy with that level of physical talent coming in, who was that much of an absolute game changer wrecker in high school and has had moments, like brief moments, of showing himself like that as a Husky, still thinks of himself that way. So, you know, may have put himself in a, you know, in a better spot. But ultimately, I feel like we're doing better on who we're picking up than, you know, who we're leaving out, I hate to say. And it'll be interesting to see, like, when we go through these position charts, where is the biggest need? We got four or five spots. Who is it? Right? Or do you give a scholarship to a guy like Drew Fowler, who should play a big part and is, you know, doesn't have one right now? Or do you use that on somebody else? It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, overall, I think this coaching staff has shown that they're coming out ahead from a portal perspective. And it's kind of the name of the game now these days. You're going to lose some folks that you're just like, oh, that hurts. But, you know, you look at it from a big picture, I think it's good for some of the student athletes, you know, who, you know, have those aspirations and they're just kind of buried. I'll tell you this, guys, I think would never want to be a college football coach. Now you are re-recruiting your team constantly.
Every year.
Yeah, that's right. Every year. It's not like the incoming recruiting class anymore. You are re-signing your entire team every year.
Or if so that's, get a key high school player. You're only renting. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
That's really the, you know, it's tough to build the roster. And I don't know if we're going to get in this or not, but you may have heard about Michigan State, quarterback last year and the receiver who torched the Husky secondary, both going into the portal on the final day. So what's Mel Tucker supposed to do at Michigan State? And they've had a couple other guys leaving the portal. I mean, that's a team that's kind of been decimated by the transfer portal. We got one of their guys, Jeremy Bernard. So, when that happens, it's like, what's a coach supposed to do? And he's the one making whatever it is, $9 million or whatever Tucker's making. It's like, he's going to be held accountable.
Oh, 100%. Yep.
Yeah. So look at the folks that we lost, right? Nothing pales in comparison to that Michigan State scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's tough because you look ahead and you say, hey, you know, like Taj Davis, right? He's a guy who had some really huge moments, that touchdown at Oregon being one, and just he had shown himself to be a playmaker on a team with a lot of receivers, right? This team could lose Giles Jackson, Jalen McMillan, and Rome next year, right? And then Taj Davis is looking at, he's a key cog in the wheel, and now he's gone. So I think that's what's really tough is I'm looking at 2024 right now going, oh, you know, there's a lot of work done.
Yeah, it's tough again. And sometimes it works out. I obviously look at a guy like Jake Haener, you know, he's third round pick and wow. Okay, it worked out for you, big man. Like that, it just really worked out for you. And then I think there's others who don't.
If he had stuck it out, he would have been starter for this team in 2020 and 2021. And you know what I mean? He we said it at the time, right? Jake Haener, like look a little bit longer down the road and yeah, you're going to start at Fresno State, but you'll probably start here. He would have been our starting quarterback for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, but like, you know, it's hard to, obviously like things have worked out for him. And you know, I think like some of the guys that we picked up, we'll talk about in a little bit, I think are going to be really interesting, but let's get into, I think just for some of the notes from spring football and how these position groups are lining up. But Mitch, what do you think about this high powered offense, man? I mean, I think it's going to be, look, expectations a mile high, right? Last year's offense, they put up 40 points a game, top 10 in nearly all categories, but how are we looking for this year?
I mean, I think you're still looking at the strength of the team here, right? Let's start up front with the big guys. You know, Mateo Mele has slotted in really nicely in center. That in part inside of the offensive line was something that everybody was looking at, wondering how it was going to play out with some competition. You know, the younger Landon Hatchett sounds like he really came on, the true freshman, which is pretty good to see. And then Parker Brailsford, I think, is another guy to watch. You know, so there's some nice depth at center. But really the guards were the interesting story, right? Was Nate Kaleppo going to take that next step forward? Looks like he's done that. was kind of cool to see Julius Bülow, right? There was some big question marks. He was a starter. Then he kind of got, you know, relegated to the second team. Sounds like he really has taken steps and strides. He kind of took it to heart, right? And said, hey, here's my shot. If it's going to work out, I got to take it. And it sounds like he did. And, you know, that's nothing against, you know, Garion Hatchett and guard Memelar, who are now their backups, right? So it feels pretty good at guard. And then you look at your tackles, Troy Fontenot, Roger Rosengarten, you know, super solid, you know, going to be a strength. The question is, it's maybe a little thin there behind them, right? Like, not quite sure how that's going to pan out, but all in all, feels like the line is really coming together nicely. You got some guys stepping up, you got some good depth on the inside, like feels like good things are happening there. And then if you move back, you know, towards quarterbacks, you know, what got me is if you think about it last year, guys, Penix was splitting reps at this time, right? So it was a three-way competition, which is kind of crazy. And it was kind of cool to see him get as many reps as he wanted. You know, we'll talk about the DBs in a little bit, but I loved how the DBs were basically saying, look, man, we're playing against an NFL guy, right? A dude, right? And it's making us better, but it just sounds like, you know, this is Penix's squad. This is his team. Dylan Morris has done a great job, I think, as the backup, you know, had a couple flashes here and there and some practices reports that I was reading. But sounds like Penix is just going to ready to take the next step and his head is in the right place. Don't worry about all this Heisman stuff. Hey, what is it going to take for us to win the Pac-12 championship, which I love, right? Let's take a step as a program. Keep moving forward.
It's crazy to think with him that he could be better. Like last year, he didn't get all the first team reps. And it's just insane to think that he's going to elevate his game even higher than he did last year with additional first team reps. It's nuts.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
I mean, honestly, I hate to say it this way, but there's kind of nowhere to go but
right.
It's not like we can expect. I mean, he already had to throw the ball 35, 40 times a game last season. And I mean, that's the thing. Grubb and DeBoer, they like to chuck it. So, you know, they're going to be in running situations or whatever, and they're still just going to, they just want to throw the ball. You can just tell they just want to throw it. I mean, he's going to get lots of opportunities this year. You mentioned Dylan Morris though. And you know, I'm curious, here's a guy pretty highly recruited, 4-star guy, right? Got the starting job in 2020. And obviously in 2021, it was painful at times. He was young. He was also very young. And now he's had 2 years of good coaching, and it seems like he's the guy like first into the film room, you know, every day type of guy. And he wants to. And so, you know, we're talking about 2024 and that pivot we're going to have to make after this season, or, you know, if the worst happens and Penix goes down and Demo has to step in. I mean, I'm a little bit more comfortable with that after just knowing that he's, you know, he's sticking it out with the roster. He's finally got good coaches and good play callers. And, you know, I think that that's a source of good depth for the Huskies at quarterback there.
I totally agree. And, you know, the thing that I love about it too is, you know, apparently one of the reasons that he stayed is he has aspirations to be a coach, right? And who better to learn from Grubb? Right. And so that was part of his decision making. Could, you know, do I go in the portal? Do I go? Am I going to be and try and be a starter? Am I going to try and go to the NFL? Realistically, probably a pretty long shot that he's going to go to the NFL. Right. Like, let's just be honest. And that went into his calculus to say, OK, like if I want to be a coach and I want to stay around the game, who better to learn from than here? And so, like, there's all upside there from that backup role. And that feels like now, that's really coming together.
Now your third string scholarship quarterback is 17 years old. So we're talking about starting 2024. I mean, and the kid's going to be, you know, 18, 19. Like, Dylan Morris has a great opportunity to be a starter his senior year, his fifth year senior year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'm excited about that position. It feels like it's just got great leadership. You know, it's where you want to be and nobody's getting caught up in the hype. And to your point, Law Dog, right? They like to chuck it around. But I just like what I'm hearing from Penix, right? Like, it just, he is focused on his craft, right? And building that. And it just feels like, it's just another year of maturity. We just got to keep them upright. Just keep them upright, right?
That's right.
Keep them healthy. Yep. So speaking of healthy, let's go to the running back room, right? A lot different story than last year. You guys, again, remember spring ball last year? It was like, who's going to run the ball? Like, who's healthy? Like, we need some bodies out there, right? It sounds like they really have that this year. And it sounds like Cam Davis is the guy right now. He's RB1, it's looking like. And, you know, part of that reason is, hey, he's a big physical guy. He stayed healthy. He stayed on the field. Everyone's really excited about Dylan Johnson from Mississippi State, Daniel Nada from Arizona State. But sounds like Cam Davis is really the dude. Personally, I was hoping to see a little bit more of Daniel Nada. Like, I'm really excited about him and what he brings to the table. It's going to be interesting to see how many reps he gets and, you know, if there's space for him. You know, from what I'm reading, the players who really made a move are Sam Adams taking the next step forward. Finally.
It's good.
Yeah. Like, that's good. Like, local guy. Like, great to see him. Legacy, if I'm not incorrect there, not mistaken. Will Nixon, really nice. That Nebraska transfer, right? Catching the ball out of the backfield. And then, guys, the freshman, Tybo Rogers out of Texas, right? Apparently had an awesome spring, was, like, very physical. Apparently had several instances where he was not really slowing down and really looking for contact. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And then you can't count out Richard Newton if he can stay healthy and all that kind of stuff. So it feels really good where we're at from a running back's room, from my perspective.
They split the carry so much last year. It's hard to envision them sticking with anyone, you know, for 15, 20 carries a game.
Well, you know, Sam Adams, so just to clarify, he's you know, legacy Seattle, dad Seahawk, but was an A&M who was after Sam Adams the third heavily, which made, I think, when we won, I mean, even bigger, even bigger, you know, deal to get him out of Eastside Catholic. But that was one as well where, you know, great high school player. And it's nice to hear, you know, what we're hearing so far, you know, that I don't think we need to see anything. The thing that worries me a little bit, and I don't know, it's hard to pick up on us. We didn't know this time last year how good Wayne Tualapapa was going to be. And we looked at the transfers in thinking that, you know, all of them had a shot at it. And we didn't know how good he was going to be. I hope they can run. They can run block as well. Or excuse me, pass block as well as Wayne Tualapapa. He's one of the best in the business. You know, and that's why he made an NFL roster. And, you know, I think, you know, with Cam, you know, Cam missed, what was it, the, you know, the bowl game, at least last half the bowl game, where he got knocked out by one of his own teammates right before the bowl game against Texas. Seems to be back and 100% healthy. You know, but I just hope we get it all around, because that, like, being able to pass block is just so huge in this offense. So we'll see.
Big deal. Big deal. I totally agree. But certainly a step forward. Don't you all agree from where we were last year in spring ball? Feels much more healthier in the running back.
Like, I think Cam Davis is a much more proven commodity. I mean, he led your team in touchdowns last year. He had some great moments. And yeah, Tualapapa is probably your bell cow or your lead back. But I mean, like I said, they were really splitting up the carries. I think Cam probably starts the year as the one. But yeah, it's in a better position than it was a year ago. I mean, we were talking about Aaron Dumas, right? Another transfer portal entry this week.
Entry and exit.
Yeah. So, I mean, because he sees the writing on the wall. So we were talking about him last year. It's like, hey, maybe he's going to grab some carries. And no.
Yeah. Totally agree. All right. So let's move on then to the other strength, I would say, when you look at the offense, the wide receivers, right?
Oh, boy.
You've got Rome doing his thing. Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan, pretty much slotted in. As folks would expect, right? But how about some guys making some noise, right? Denzel Boston. Sounds like he had a pretty sick camp, guys. Like, catch, huge catch radius, doing everything right. So sounds like Rome was like saying, hey, I'm going to take you under my wing kind of thing. And then he's like, oh, this dude is like maybe bigger than I am. So I don't think I can take you under my wing. but like, you know, it sounds like great stuff coming out of there. And we'll see how he shows up. Jeremy Bernard, transfer back, doing all the right stuff, right? Everything that you hear is work ethic, showing up day in, day out. Giles Jackson, too. Like, his name came up a lot in a lot of the spring reports that I saw. So, you know, the depths there, I think they have such a deep receiving core. You know, and this is unfortunately why we lost that Taj Davis, like we were talking about earlier, to the portal. He probably saw the writing on the wall. But man, they really are looking really solid from a receiver perspective. Should be able to handle any injuries if they run into that. And that 1-2 punch, I know we're all excited about Rome and J-Mac, but man, they got a lot of talent around them too. So if you sleep, if you overcompensate for those two, imagine what the other, you know, receivers are going to do to you.
The only guy, the only guy who graduates is Giles Jackson. And so he's the only guy who's for certain not going to be back in 2024. Polk is, or Rome is obviously he's a junior, but he's obviously he's in all these draft first round projections right now. So I think we could assume he's probably gone. McMillan might be interesting. Who knows? I mean, with Penix graduating as well, he may feel like it's time. So you could really be decimated in this receiving core at the end of this season. But then, like you, so Jalen Polk, that's a guy I'll be watching. I mean, if he has a huge year, is he going to try to make it to the league? And Taj Davis, you know, would be there, and those two probably be the starters going into 2024. But now it's probably looking like Polk, and then I guess maybe Boston, or maybe it's Jeremy Bernard. It's Jeremy. But I mean, I mean, it's, but you know, you're going from a very proven strength to a big question mark out of 2023. But as for this season, I mean, yeah, like you're saying, Mitch, they can chuck the ball around, and hey, you're going to give extra attention to this guy. Fine, we'll throw it to this guy. I mean, we know Grubb is an expert at this, right? You're going to direct your attention here. I'm going to put it over here. So
I was glad to see Jabez Tanay come back. I thought we were going to lose him.
Yeah.
You know, with you'd follow Sam to, you know, his Kennedy Catholic coach. You know, at Cal Poly, I thought it was writings on the wall, but you know, it's one where it'll be interesting to see him stick around and what he does. But man, you're right, Mitch. It's like you can't, like, I'm not going to get into a debate with some Ohio State fan about who's your receiving core is number one. But if you're not talking about this receiving core being in the top five, you're not paying attention to college football.
Look at the guys that you got coming back. You got Devin Culp, Jack Westover. You got some guys pressing Cuevas from you know, the JUCO transfer that's coming in. You know, looks like a solid unit as well, right?
With Ryan Otten. Ryan Otten coming up behind,
Just see massive 6'6 Ryan Otten. And then Quentin Moore, who I think is like this just massive physical specimen as well, who could show. But yeah, you're going to be looking at Jack Westover, who didn't play a lot in the spring. That's my only concern about him, is, you know, he's taken his dings and gotten back up. But, you know, guys who didn't play a bit in the spring, but you know, you've got both of those guys. You talk about who you're losing next year, you're losing Culp and Westover, right? So that's what I want to see is, you know, is it going to be Quentin Moore? Is it going to be Josh Cuevas, the sophomore? Is it going to be Ryan Naughton? You know, one of those three who step up big and take the reins. This is an area where I wouldn't expect them to pick up one more, or potentially take one of those four scholarships and get a transfer in. Be interesting.
I'm feeling really good about that group. I mean, from a run blocking perspective, but also from just a general athletic perspective, back to Law Dog's point, Grubb likes to really game plan and move those pieces around. He's got some athletes that he can move around, and then he can also bring them in on the line. And if we want to kind of go jumbo, kind of some of like those elephant kind of sets that like Stanford's really well known for, they've got the talent to do a lot there in that room as well. So man, they're looking great.
Tight ends emerged as the year went on last year, and really in the Alamo Bowl, they had a big game. And so, you know, maybe that's something where, you know, they're going to focus on this year, say, hey, you're going to give extra attention to our downfield receivers, then we're going to, you know, just kill you over the middle with our tight end. So but traditionally DeBoer, Grubb have not really relied heavily on tight ends. So, you know, we'll see. And I think that may prohibit that reputation, if that's out there, may prohibit them from actually getting into the transfer portal, BT, and picking up somebody. But we could probably use a body there, because it is getting a little thinner than it was.
At least in the, you know, the 2024-2025 class, it'll be interesting to see. Hey, should we get into the defense?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about it. Hey,
let's address the awkward silence. Let's get into the defense.
Let's get into it, dude. So look, I think the D, they obviously struggled in the beginning of the year, and I think showed some promise towards the back, at least third of the season, hoping to get back to what we've really come to expect from Death Row. You know, but look, we needed that 40-point average. We needed those last year. So looking at the edge, we lose Jeremiah Martin. That A&M transfer, now a member of the Cleveland Browns, man, way to go. You know, it's interesting, like a team like Cleveland, how many undrafted free agents they have to pick up because they gave away basically their entire draft in the Deshaun Watson trade. And so, you know, maybe you're going to a place where Jeremiah Martin could fit in and make a roster spot. But, you know, you're losing 10.5 sacks, all conference honors. But now, like the top two, the big two, Braylon Trice and ZTF, like that should be set. Like that's your top two. Right there on the edge. You know, but besides that, with Savelle Smalls going on, as we talked about, you know, you're looking at that after that. To me, it's like, boy, I don't know. There's a ton of excitement around Showtime. You know, Lance Holdsclaw, finally, if he can stay healthy. And Zach Durfee, the Sioux Falls transfer that we picked up, I think he looked really good in the spring game for what it's worth. And you have some freshmen flashing. But one thing I think they may end up doing is pulling like Voye Tanufi over to play a little bit of an edge. You know, like Voye is more, even though, you know, you look at him as more interior line, but, you know, he's, you know, best in long, you know, third and long passing downs, kind of being that sack master, you know, but maybe they have to pull him in as that third dude. So it'll be interesting to see. The guards, I mean, look, same thing, the big two. Tuli Tuligasanoa and Fatui Tui Tele. That's who you have your most confidence in. And MJ Ale is the third, for sure. And they like learning a lot of guys in, so they're going to need all of them. But they have to show up in the freaking run D, man. Ugh, that run D was so tough, particularly because of how many tackling difficulty that we had in the secondary on run, that so many of those got through and got through at full speed. Javon Parker, he really showed out. He's the twins, right? Javon and Armon. And Javon appears to be the one who looks to be playing more downs. And some of that's because Armon's been injured, but Javon appears to be healthy and ready. And look, I'd love to see Jacob Bandis live up to his potential. He's another one of those guys that we were so high on as a recruit. And he's got on there and showed out a little bit, but he just has not lived up to his potential yet, but he could this year. But that piece to me, I'm not worried as much about, you know, third and long and when they got to get after the quarterback. We will get there. But stopping off tackle left, off tackle right, and not making linebackers and God forbid safeties make tackles is huge. It's huge.
And they rotated so much. I mean, yeah. Last year, everybody got on the field, right? And just, you know, you kind of had some series out there where it was just like, man, who are these guys? And, you know, like you mentioned, the top four on that D line. I feel great about all those guys. But behind them, you know, especially with the transfer situation. And I mean, you know, Tanufi's a guy I feel pretty good about. So I, you know, maybe they're five deep, but this is
not. Yeah, he's your fifth, or where are you putting him?
Yep. Yeah. And this is not like an eight deep unit that it really needs to be. So haven't seen yet. Yeah.
Somebody of that list of names, Holdsclaw, Durfee, you know, Javon Parker is going to have to really
get opportunities.
Have to really step up. They'll get opportunities. They got to step up.
Yeah.
So linebacker again in run coverage was a struggle, but like you got to love a healthy Elofolufoshio. I feel like Eddie. I think this is going to be an Eddie Renaissance year.
Yeah, me too.
I really agree. He's going to show us what he could. And everything last year, like Alfonso Tupatala, that's your second, who's just an absolute stud. Like he was the linebacker last year, and I'd expect him to play very well this year. And he got some depth from Carson Bruner. Carson Bird, I think, really showed out. And then look, the walk-on who, you know, everybody's talking about maybe earning a scholarship, who looked really good in the spring, Drew Fowler. He showed out. And I think, another one who hasn't been healthy enough to see as much of the field during spring and during the spring game, but Raylan Goforth, you know, 24-year-old, you know, 25-year-old physical specimen out of SC, you know, the transfer. But, you know, look, I think he came here with an understanding that he's not coming in and getting a starting role immediately, but he has all the physical tools. If he can stay healthy, maybe he's that other guy. I think it's going to be interesting to see.
Bruner's a guy I'm watching there. He had kind of a breakout at the end of, what was it, 2021. And then, you know, coaching shakeup, kind of scheme shakeup, and he was kind of the odd man out. And, you know, I felt like we saw enough from him to make me think that he could be a player. And I hope that he's going to be a junior this year. So it's like he's a really key guy, because if he has a nice year, you know, that means he'll be back for 2024 when we're really going to need to rebuild this defense.
We sure will. And you look at, we're going to, as you said, we're going to need two of those guys to get some reps. It can't be Eddie and Tupatala every single down. So is it going to be Carson? Is it going to be Drew Fowler? Is it going to be Raylan Goforth? Who's it going to be? Or someone else who shows up? The Husky position, man. I think Mish Powell has it locked up. But after that, like, I don't know. Tristan Dunn, Mikel Esteem. You know, I don't know after that. But, like, it right now on the Husky side, it's Mish, you know, and safety. Look, you lose the leader, Alex Cook, headed to the G-man, dude. Alex Cook on the Giants. And I hope he makes a roster spot, because, like, Alex Cook in the end, he was the heart and soul of that Husky secondary and that team last year as the senior, you know, the leader. So who's going to step up in that position? Now, so you lose Alex Cook. I think it was really amazing though. Remember, he moved over from wide receiver to safety, and I think a real success story. That leaves Asa Turner, right? So Asa Turner's the senior. This has to be his year. And with Asa, you know, we talked about this last year, but where Asa, a guy's trying to turn the corner on him and get down the sideline, I love it, man. Do that all day to Asa, and he's going to punish you out of bounds, and he's going to get there faster. But when a shifty running back breaks through into the secondary, and Asa's on the back of his heels, oh boy, I'm holding my breath, right? I'm holding my breath. And I think that's some technique. Obviously he has the physical tool set, but that's where I think he really needs to step up. And then the other one's Dom Hampton, who shifted over from the Husky, you know, and Dom is obviously just a freaking bruiser, has that same kind of skill set, but I want those guys to get really strong and wrap up tackling, against the run and then like learn to kind of use their speed in the right way and be smart. That's what I want to say about safety position.
Interesting. Yeah, they've addressed corner with so many new faces and bodies, right? But safety is an area where this team has just been lacking a kind of a big playmaker there. I mean, even Alex Cook, you know, your steady veteran, he was never really like the elite playmaker that you had in a guy like Taylor Rapp or Buda Baker, you know. And so, you know, this is really – that's a really an area, because it's crucial to run support. Also, and you know, it's just that's an area that we've struggled.
I just want to see better tackling there, like to BT's point, right? Like, you know, Law Dog, like, let's say I don't know if we really have the safeties at the caliber that we've been blessed with from the Buddhas or the Raps, right? Like, let's just be clear, we don't see that talent, right? Just wrap up, just be. You know, the security blanket, not looking for huge hits, decleaters, anything from that position, just be fundamentally sound. That's what my hope is. We could take the next step from that position this year.
Mm-hmm. And it's tough because those two names that I gave you, Mitch, are bruisers who like to just absolutely deplete people.
Totally.
They both love that. And like every play isn't chasing a guy to the sideline before he can get a first down. You know, if it's that, like, I love you all day, guys, murder them. But like the rest, it's just, well, we'll see. I think there's going to be some movement around left to right. And I'll talk about the corners, and some of those corners can end up playing some time at safety too. Like Jordan Perryman, the UC Davis transfer, you know, he's now, so he made the Las Vegas Raiders roster. You know, so like, good for him, okay. Man. He struggled. Let's be honest with me, the time of the thing is frustrating, but I don't think he was healthy the whole year, and B, I would say maybe the same thing Alex took, but so much was asked of him, you know, that I'm glad he's still going to get a shot and a sniff at the NFL. But that's the guy who's leaving, who's your starter. Now I think your big starter obviously is Jabbar Muhammad out of Oklahoma State, 5'9". So he's short, but he is absolutely primed and ready to grow. And I think he may end up being like the biggest transfer pickup that we've had. I think we're going to see a battle for the second, and it's going to be between Thaddeus Dixon from Long Beach City College, which was interesting because that was one where like a lot of people were scratching their head, like, God, there's not a lot of good tape on this guy, and why isn't anybody else going after Thaddeus Dixon? But he's had a really good spring, and then Javion Green, I think, he stepped up. But the big one, of course, Elijah Jackson, who missed half the freaking season. But if he's healthy, he could be, I think, that second strong option on the other side against Jabbar Muhammad. Jackson probably has the leg up. But like, and they both had picks in the spring game. But I think it's some mix of those, and maybe there's another name that we just didn't see enough in spring who's going to step up. But it's another year where, look, we were 117th in the nation in takeaways last year. Come on, I mean, death row, like, we got to do a lot better.
Yeah, no, I mean, death row is dead, buddy. I mean, I hate to break it to you this way, but I mean,
it's just commuted sentence row. Like, we got to do a lot.
Yeah,
we got to do a lot better.
It just is not what it was, right? And they haven't recruited that position the way that they were, and that started with Jimmy Lake. I mean, DeBoer, you know, in his first full class here, that's probably the best, you know, group of recruits that he's brought in. So I think right now, you know, we may be back. We may be on the way back, but right now there's a lot of unproven. And there were so many guys getting thrown into action last year where it was just like, who's this? Who's that? And they were just so banged up. So, I mean, any kind of consistency health-wise, you know, you'll see an improvement. It's actually the area of the team that I'm not going to say I'm not worried about it, but I am expecting a bigger improvement there than I would almost anywhere else on the field, just because it was so lousy in the middle of the year last year that I think they, unlike Penix, where we may have nowhere to go but down, I think it's secondary, we have nowhere to go but up. So I'm optimistic, actually.
And here's the thing with the defense, guys. Like, if they get 5 points better per game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I'm feeling awesome. Great.
Look out.
Look out. Sure. Right. Like, we don't need a sea change here. We just need steady progress. Right. And if they could do that, then we're going to be pretty good.
Oh, you know, I just hope that there's some diamond out there that we don't know enough. You know, this is like, you know, Caleb Presley, Curly Reed, like all these guys that we just don't know anything about, that somebody's going to step up and be that guy, that other option. But again, as you said, only one way to go but up. If you could shave 3 points, shave a field goal off of that from last year, we'll see. But I love, again, like your top two edge, your top two interior linemen. We know who the linebackers are. There's some talent in the secondary, but we have to wait and see. We'll have to see how these guys show up, man. It's going to be interesting. Last one, LD, you want to talk a little about, get tip of the cap to the special teams? Because there's a bunch of turnover on core special teams.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what there is to talk about, right? I mean, you know, Peyton Henry, you know, Husky legend in quotes, definitely, you know, his presence will be missed, you know, going into this year, because he was just Mr. Reliable kind of as he got to end of his career. So, I mean, who's going to be kicking? I guess it's sounding like maybe Grady Gross is that guy that they signed out of Arizona last year as a walk-on. And, you know, Tim Horn, I guess, had left in the transfer portal last year. You got Jaden Green, your long snapper. He's back for his senior year. He's been, you know, pretty reliable since that first
game. First snap ever.
Yeah, the first snap, yeah. Yeah. And then I guess you've got Jack McAllister back there punting, and he was, I'd say, the results there were kind of uneven at best. And so, you know, but there's definitely going to be competition. There's a couple of walk-ons at all those positions. So I think we're going to need to kind of see how fall camp goes. Last year, they had kind of mixed in, you know, the kickoff duties, and then had somebody else. Peyton Henry wasn't doing that. He was just doing the place kicking. And so they'll probably do a little bit of that, right? They're going to find, you know, guys that can do one thing and just go with that, because they don't have any scholarship players, you know, on the kicking side. So
that feels like also a portal probably fill in too, like, right? Like,
no, but there's a lot of teams that are going to be in that position. So you got competition, and here's the good news. You got scholarships now to give.
Yeah.
So I think that's maybe, you know, had been part of their thinking when it's like, hey, we're at 91, when they were kind of hitting that high point scholarships. Like, we don't have scholarships to give. Now they can really hit that area. And, you know, hopefully, it's an area where the coverage, and particularly last year, got a little bit more consistent than it had been. We still haven't had kind of that dynamic returner, but it's been solid. It's been okay to solid. The kicking, though, you know, Peyton Henry was great, you know, these last couple of years. And I think that's the area where I think we go into 2023 and go, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. We might be going for it a lot on fourth downs.
I mean, which we do already. That's the thing. It's like, right. You know, DeBoer just doesn't like to kick, you know, he's kind of like, he just doesn't want to give them the ball back. You know, he doesn't want to settle for three. He wants to touch it. It's just how he is. So maybe that's, you know, prohibiting them from landing big players at those spots. But definitely, you know, I think we will see some fourth down decisions. He's going to put the ball in Michael Penix's hand rather than a walk-on's foot, right?
I would love to see Giles Jackson step up to what we thought we were. It sounds bad, but like, look, special teams rookie of the year at Michigan had, you know, one of the only players who scored a touchdown by a kick return, receiving and rushing, four kick returns for touchdowns at Michigan. You know, those are the things where he didn't break any out last year. Maybe this is asking too much, but I'd love to see Giles Jackson break a few.
No, I think that's what those types of things can really make a huge difference. And when we had, does this team go 12-1 and make the playoff without Dante Pettis in 2016? Right. I mean, Arizona game,
we lost to Utah
on the road, lost to Utah. I mean, so, you know, those big plays can really make a big difference. And especially with the expectations Huskies have this year, it's like, you don't want to have areas of your team that are just a black hole and a weakness, but that's, I mean, not going to say that's what this is yet, but I mean, if I had to pick an area of weakness in one phase of the game, I think that that's maybe what we're looking at.
Yeah. I'll look at like his highlights, 99 kick return yards and a 50 yarder, 158 all purpose yards, Giles Jackson against Alabama in the Citrus Bowl. Yeah. You know, like he's got it in the tank. I know he's got it. We see the shiftiness.
He also doesn't have four stars blocking up field for him. Just saying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's some truth. But look, on the special teams, last thing I'll say about it is if there's one area I think you can coach up with less talent, it's probably special teams, you know, versus like, you know, on the defensive side, you can only do so much with the talent that you have. But let's see if they can take it seriously. And maybe you're like last year, they had to spend so much time coaching, getting the offense installed and the defense installed that like, how many reps do you have left for special teams? And I'm hoping this year they got some time to coach it up.
I mean, my only other thing that I'm going to talk about from a weakness perspective is, Jen, will you please let us go back out to our tailgates at halftime? Come on. You're making enough money on concessions already. Just throw us a bone, please.
I love it. She just goes to the budget committee. She's like, yeah, you know all that cash we've been making serving $17 beers at halftime? I got a better idea. I was listening to the Dog Pod. And I'm so with you that I missed that. Come on, Jenny Cohen. This is, you know, let's throw the fans a bone. Let's get back out at halftime. So should we get into like the rest of the Pac-12 has been absolutely bonkers this year, you know, as a conference. This is our last year with USC and UCLA. I mean, things are going crazy at CU. It's absolutely nuts. The Big 12 is waging a freaking smear campaign of like, this is, you know, this is like Putin on Facebook against us. It's just crazy, crazy time. Lotta, you want to talk a little bit about the state of the conference, particularly like media deals, which are driving everything?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this has been a crazy. When has it ever been this crazy without the actual realignment happening, right? I mean, it was crazy when the ACC just said, oh, Big East, we're going to like drop a nuclear bomb on your conference, right? That was crazy.
Yep.
But what's been going on with this like smear campaign, the media for the last 5 months, I guess, actually really since you know, last summer, has been nuts. I mean, I have a personal like disdain for Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports. Like he has been parroting whatever bullshit will come out of some Big 12 like assistant athletic director's mouth about the Pac-12 media negotiations and reporting it like it's news. And then all these people online, you know, go out and repeat it. And Dennis Dodd's reporting this and all. I mean, like it was just last night. He comes out and says the Pac-12 is no longer negotiating with ESPN. Immediately, two other credible reporters come out and say this is not true. They had a meeting as recently as today.
Right.
And so it's just like, where are you getting this crap, right? But the Big 12 is literally trying to destabilize the Pac-12, just like Kliavkov said, you know, last summer, basically. And they're just waging this like this guerrilla media campaign with these unverified, I guess nobody's verified on Twitter anymore, but it was these unverified MHVR3 and you know, all people like all these other people just kind of don't really have any insider knowledge who are just espousing all their views. So with all that out of the way, right? I mean, this is like this big smear campaign going on, as BT described it, about the Big 12 trying to destabilize. I think the point is the Pac-12 kind of opened this negotiating window with their media partners. And I think everyone was assuming that something would be done by now just because it's been open so long. But I think we have to assume at a certain point that, like, okay, they're not getting exactly the university presidents are not getting exactly what they wanted, because if they were, they'd already have signed the deal by now.
That's right.
But then the Big 12 opened their window in the fall and just immediately, you know, re-upped with ESPN. But that was a lot simpler, I would say, because all of those, and this is getting into the weeds a little bit, but the Big 12 kind of famously didn't have any deal for their tier three rights, because Texas refused to give their tier three rights to the Big 12, right? And they started the Longhorn Network and all that. So for the Big 12, it was easy for them to be like, okay, there's not going to be a West Virginia network. There's not going to be a Cincinnati network. So we're just going to, you know, they were all on the same page. Like, let's get on ESPN. You know, it's going to be heavy streaming probably. Let's get on Fox. It's going to be a lot of FS1. But we're going to kind of re-up with our partners and kind of do, you know, what we have been doing. And that makes the Pac-12 just look foolish, because, you know, here they are sitting there trying to negotiate. And it's like, oh, your rival conference that's trying to destabilize you just signed a deal. So. Right. So it's making everybody look bad, and the longer it goes on. But I mean, I think that the main concern about it going on is that a team or a university like maybe Arizona, that would rather fit into the Big 12, gets nervous, doesn't like what they're seeing in the negotiating or whatever, and then decides to join the Big 12. And from what we're hearing, the Big 12 has this pro rata clause, basically meaning if they get another Power 5 team, that they'll add that same annual value that the other teams are getting to the deal. So for them, it's what, a $380 million deal divided by 12. You know, they'll get an extra $31 million for in Arizona who joins the conference. I don't know if that's the case, but if that is the case, that gives them a serious, you know, carrot to maybe bring somebody else out of the Pac-12. And this is also ironic, right? Because it's like, here we were two summers ago, Texas and Oklahoma were announcing they were leaving. We could have had our pick of the Big 12 and said, okay, we want them and them and them, or Oklahoma State or whatever. And, you know, instead now the roles are kind of reversed. UCLA and USC kind of left everybody holding their dicks, so to speak. And, you know, then the Big 12 was kind of all unified, all on the same page, and have now been waging this like media campaign. So, I mean, that's all by way of saying there's nothing to report, right? I mean, we don't have anything to report, but those are all the dynamics that George is trying to deal with. And, you know, it's unfortunate, because the longer there's no deal, the more uncertainty and the more this media campaign kind of takes hold in the narrative. And I'm afraid of what it's doing to the brand and the reputation of the Pac-12, which is already struggling, and now they've got to, you know, fend off these media reports like they're going to ION TV and the CW.
That's right,
because the Big 12 is trying to spread these stupid rumors, and it's like it just damages the brand.
Yeah, it's not helping things at all.
The longer it drags, it's no bueno. It's not good. And then you have to tie expansion to it as well, right? Like, it really feels like they're not going to pull the trigger on San Diego State or whomever else, because it's related. It's all this like big ball of wax. And so they gotta get it done, man. And I would be very nervous if I have faith. I have faith in Kliakoff. I have faith in, you know, the fact that they have the ADs much more involved now. You know, that's way better than where things were before in the past. You know, as I was listening to one of the Canzano and Wilner interviews with Utah's former athletic director, which was fantastic. It was such a good listen.
Yeah, my
gosh. Oh God, that was such a great episode. And you know, just hearing about the dysfunction of the previous Pac-12 management and how much it's going in the right direction. We got to be patient and all of that. But guys, we got to get this wrapped in this summer. We cannot go into fall ball with this stuff still going on.
Yeah,
that would be really bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, traditionally the media rights get kind of – those deals get kind of resolved late spring, summer timeline. I think what – you know, I think the Utah expansion announcement occurred in June, for example. The Pac-12, I think that they had invited Colorado a little earlier. That might have been April or May. But we're kind of just right in that time period now where – you know, you're coming up on the final year of your deal. The Pac-12 kind of kicked it off early. But, I mean, here's the thing. They had that negotiating window, exclusive negotiating with Fox and ESPN. Well, Fox had already raided your conference and taken UCLA and USC. So they basically, I mean, it's well documented. They were like, pass, we're out. And, I mean, for those of us who remember these negotiations from 12 years ago, Fox and ESPN didn't want all of the tier one rights back then. I mean, they each basically have, I think their contract calls for 22 games a year each. So that's not even two games per week per network, right?
Right.
So, and also another dynamic in here is that the Pac-12 owns its own tier three rights, which is something that no other conference does. I mean, ESPN owns Big 12, owns the ACC network and the SEC network for those conferences and owns all that tier three. The Pac-12, you know, has its own, and that's what the Pac-12 network was supposed to be, this lucrative, thing to bring in the money for that. And so they have to negotiate all of that as well. And so, especially if they're adding new streaming like Apple and Amazon, it's taking more time. It's clearly where their, I think, head is, that they need to get more, but I mean, frankly, personally, I know there's a lot of reticence to go on like Apple TV, for example, but at least every household in the country can get Apple TV.
You can, so that's something you cannot say if you want it, it's possible for you to have it, I guess.
Yeah. And so I think that's not necessarily a terrible option, but I do think you need some of the exposure piece on ESPN and some of these other networks. So how you manage that and balance that is not just a simple negotiation like what the Big 12 just went through, where they said, okay, Fox, you've got our 40 games that you're taking a year. You're just going to keep those, and this is the price. ESPN, you're keeping what you have, plus you're getting all this stuff on ESPN+. Plus, this is the price. I mean, that was an easier thing to go through than what the Pac-12 is going through. And part of that is because there's less demand for their product. But the other part is that they need to be more creative and be more open to other media partners to match the money piece. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I think if we are still talking about this for the first dog pod of the fall in August, that's going to be bad. That's going to be bad.
Yeah. You're relying so much on the pack also having just a massive year, this year. And,
part of the calculation, they might think, you know what, our brand is too damaged and maybe we need to, you know, remind everybody like that we're playing pretty good ball out here. And maybe that is part of the calculation. I can't tell you, but
could be. Yeah,
but you know, there's really no, the only reason they have to get something done is to stop all of this BS in the media, right?
Exactly.
And to get the Colorados and the Arizonas of the world, who are supposedly the wobbliest, to get them to calm down. And, I mean, it wasn't a coincidence that the Arizona University president, the Colorado athletic director, are the ones that are going out to the media and being quoted and whatnot, because they're trying to show, hey, we're with the conference. So we'll see if there's any benefit to them kind of keeping it behind closed doors as much as they have. But right now, it's, you know, it's just making everybody nervous.
Oh, yeah, it totally is. Yeah. It's going to be a wild year for the conference. It's going to be a wild year for the Dogs. Look, we're going to be back again. We got another episode up because we're going to talk through what this schedule looks like. We gave a little tip of the cap to everything that's happening at Michigan State, but I think there's so many programs that are new starters, transfers in, transfers out. What's going to happen with Colorado? What's going to happen with Arizona? So many. I just think it's going to – this is going to be one of those years where there is just so much new some of these programs that we think are going to be great are really going to struggle, and then there's going to be some diamonds in the rough as well. Our next podcast, we're going to come back and talk about that, talk about the season, maybe get a little bit more crisp on who we think the starters are going to be, and get into what's going to be what we hope to be an amazing 2023 Husky football season. Can I get a go, Dogs?
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Let's do it.